Hello and welcome to Exiled Eagles. My name is Rob Seltzer, and none of us can work out who we hate more, Lewis Dunk or Neil Maupay. Joining me today, we have Ned Rock. How are you, Ned?
Sorry, I thought you just enjoyed things more on delay, Rob. yeah, no, I'm good, mate.
I mean, if anyone wants to know, I mean, there's six people on the planet will know what that's about. So
it's good though. It's a great joke for those six people. They'll enjoy it.
The joke is that I didn't wake up at 4:55 to watch the game. I watched it at 7:30 this morning. So, oh well, c'est la vie. Marky Mark's returned from Bush. How are you, Marky Mark?
Yeah, I'm good, mate. Good to be here tonight. And here I was getting caught bloody plastic the other week. The old sleeping Celts here. As he pleases to watch the game and doing things at his own pace and his leisure, if you will.
Fucking right.
Where's the commitment, mate? Where's the commitment?
But, there is none.
Anyway, no, I'm good, mate. Yeah, been out bush with a couple of mates for 4 days over the weekend and off grid and got amongst it. It was great. It's nice to just get back to nature and shoot at several parts of it. It's good fun.
Beautiful.
The most Aussie thing this pod's ever heard. Went bush.
Yeah, there we go. And they are the dulcet tones of Dale Quarty. How are you, Dale?
I've been up since 4:30, mate, to watch a Palace match. How are you?
You are I doff my cap to you. You are a better man and fan than I am. I'm not denying it. You are all better fans than me. I am a plastic. I am a sofa fan. Whatever. I watched it. I slept through the game and watched it later on. And the result was exactly the same as you fuckers saw. So there we go. All right, so after the first part of Celts bashing, I'm sure that's not the last. Let's move on and start talking about some Palace. So since we last podded, I think this is one of the shortest turnarounds we've ever had. Well done, us. We've only played three games rather than the usual half a season. So 1-1, drawn 1, lost 1. So Spurs, Liverpool, Brighton in that order. Well, how do we feel about the return from those three? Let's start with Dale. Go on, Dale. Well, how do you feel the return from those three? We'll talk about performances afterwards, but
I think the last pod, you actually reeled off five fixtures. Mm-hmm. So those three plus
Leicester and Arsenal.
And I think we all pretty much said if we get 5 points, we'll be happy with that. So we've got 4 of 2 to play. I know we're going to get onto performances, but we probably will look at today's one, the Brighton game, as one that got away. Liverpool, you can do worse than lose 3-0 at home to Liverpool. We could lose 3-0 to Liverpool. You could lose at home 7-0. and Spurs were Spursy. So, yeah, I can't complain with 4 points.
Agreed. Mark.
Yeah, that was the tone, wasn't it, when we signed off last time? We spooled out the next five games and what return we would get. I recall I said five with a win, two draws and two losses in there. So we're ahead of that curve, I guess. I think I did say we'd probably manage to bottle it against Brighton or at least not win. So tick on that front. And
it's your fault is all I'm hearing here, Mark.
mainly. As a whole, pretty good. Yeah, the Liverpool result, if we took our chances, could have been very different. Could have been a la Brentford and gone 3-3 and got something out of it. Spurs was great. Mid-morning for you, mate, was what it was. And we're going north, not south, and get the points and on track or marginally better than what we anticipated. So not too many complaints without being prodded.
Yeah, you can say my it was a perfectly reasonable time to watch football at 7:30.
The work, mate. Someone's got to work for a living.
Yeah.
tough shit. Go on. One thing I would say, Mike, we can check about the Brighton prediction, but I think we've all got one prediction wrong with the top goal scorer. I think I'm gonna concede that now with our top goal scorer this season. So
Yeah, I think I might be off track with that one. And the number two, I think.
I think your number is a disgrace, but we can move that. We can slide.
Plenty of time, Mark. Stay strong.
The season is but young.
Okay. Ned.
Oh, look, I think you look at it, you know, if you sort of say at the start of the season, 6 games in 6 points, it sounds fairly underwhelming. But then when you consider that of those 6 games, you played the reigning European champions away, I believe the European champions before that, and chuck in Spurs as well for good measure, as part of those first three, and West Ham, who were flying in a European contender, as part of your 6 games, then I think you can sit there and go, yeah, look, 6 points is not the worst return for a team that's been building, completely rebuilt.
I was just saying that I think if you've got that right, we've played 3 of the last 3 Champions League finalists from the 3 seasons. So Chelsea won it.
I believe so, yeah.
Liverpool won it the year before.
Yeah.
And Spurs, they beat Spurs in the final, didn't they, actually?
Yeah.
So, yeah, there you go. Yeah.
Something like that. Sure. We don't fact check on this show, so it's fine. No,
thank God.
So we'll claim, so whatever you said there, Dale, is absolutely spot on, and you supported my point brilliantly. So we will accept it. But yes, I mean, in terms of as a sort of first off run of fixtures, it was pretty tough. So to come away with 6 points so far could very easily have been 8 or 10. No complaints at this point. Could be better, but definitely could be worse.
Absolutely. I think with every Brentford game, that point looks better at the moment, considering that was the second game of the season, as we kind of grow into it against a team that knew what they were doing, and potentially we could have won it if Conor Gallagher hadn't hit the bar/post or whatever it was. I think just on that stat that Ned and Dale made up, but we're going to claim it as gospel. I'm pretty sure if you look at the 9 of our last 10 games, including the end of last season, have been against teams in the top. Well, they were teams in the top 9 of the Premier League. I mean, that's a hell of a run.
Well, I think something like 5 out of our 6 games this year, the team that we've been playing, if they'd beaten us, they would be on top. Or already were top. Yeah. So, we're giving a bit too much credit to Brighton there, though, with that stat. So, I didn't want to bring it up.
I mean, we've spoken about it in the WhatsApp group. If the fixtures fall favourably, well done. Well done to you. But to come out of that period, I think a lot of Palace fans are like, we could be rock bottom with 1 or 2 points by this point. And if you are, don't panic too much because it's a process. But to come out of it, I think we're 15th, 6 points. No, I don't. There's some absolute fodder in this league this season, I'd say. So we won't go down for sure. I'd say we're probably ahead of the curve of where we thought we would be, which will lead us nicely into kind of those performances. Now, for me, I think they've been, let's see, if we compare what would have happened last season or again, and what did happen last season to with Spurs, with Liverpool and with Brighton. I mean, Spurs, okay, we drew 1-1, but we all know for a fact that how we would have played against even what we think was a weaker Spurs team. We would have sat back, let them have the ball. Harry Kane would have no doubt scored because he would have had touches in the box. And we'd have been like, there was a chance we should have got at them. Liverpool, we didn't even have a touch in their box last season away. This year, hit the post twice. Edouard should have scored. We should have had a penalty. We looked pretty good. And then obviously this morning, well, midday for me, we played Brighton off the park. And they nicked a goal at the end. Last year, they played us off the park twice. We nicked 4 points off them. It was bloody beautiful, don't get me wrong. But they can come away thinking they were damn lucky to get a point this morning. So only praise from me. I think I can see the process. I can see it happening.
Only praise, mate. We only lost at Liverpool, apparently, because of the referee. So
it was a massive factor. If you don't think the refereeing decisions in that game was a massive factor, and I'll argue that all day long, Thiago booked in the first 10 minutes. Milner booked 75 times. Huge difference.
with it, where was
the referees? I thought he had some lovely finishes from those corners too, the ref.
Yeah.
He snuck in at the back post for a great header.
Can't be asked.
In all seriousness though, where was VAR in the Liverpool game? Why did that not, like, as far as I know, it didn't even get utilised?
Oh, there was look at it, but it's so what I mean. With the Liverpool game, I'm not as fussed this season because they have been quite consistent on. They were very vocal at the start of the year about saying they've upped their threshold of what is a penalty and what they're going to get involved in. And as a result, they've basically got involved in absolutely nothing except for Kyle Walker's blatant foul at Southampton. But most of those sorts of decisions, not just in our games, but in a lot of other games, haven't been referred back to VAR. So if that's how it's going to be for the whole season for everyone, so be it.
And we can go straight away. It evened out because we didn't get the one with Benteke, which probably was a penalty. And tonight, or this morning, Brighton didn't get the one on Welbeck, which was iffy. You've seen them given. And if it was given against us, you'll be fuming. If it was given for us, you'd be a little bit embarrassed. So if VAR's not going to get involved with any of those, I'll take it. I'm happy with it.
Yeah,
a bit of difference between the Checkers one and Wardy's one this morning, though. I'm sure the Boffins up top had a quick look at that and went, oh, it's Joe Ward, isn't it? Play on.
Well, obviously. I mean,
yeah,
can't give fouls against Joe Ward.
God, no.
That's actually written into the Premier League rules this season. It was part of the update. It was tolerance levels are going up. So you know, you make sure that you need a lot more contact. And if it's Joel Ward, tolerance levels through the roof. Doesn't matter what he does, can punch him in the face if he wants to. Obviously, he wouldn't. Too good a guy. But if he wants to, perfectly legal.
Yeah, I figured as much.
Just on the VAR thing, when we start talking about performances. Like, and this is not just Palace. I've banged this drum. The refereeing is awful in the Premier League. If you don't think the refereeing standard is bad, then holy shit. I mean, look at the...
I don't think the refereeing standard is bad, Rob.
It's atrocious.
If the refereeing standard in the Premier League is atrocious, then the refereeing standard generally is atrocious, which means that football everywhere is atrocious.
So, see how many Premier League referees are refereeing in the Champions League this week?
I haven't looked at the Champions League this week, Rob.
None. Not one. There's a reason for that. There's a reason why no Premier League referees go to international tournaments, because they're poo. Simply. Like, they make too many wrong decisions.
I'd love to fact check that one, but we don't do fact checking on the show, so I've dug myself right into a hole there, unfortunately.
I thought they brought the standard of refereeing up this year in the Premier League by introducing an Australian
ref. Save it.
Absolutely.
All right. Performances. Go on, Dale. How are you feeling about how performances? Do you think we're further along than you thought we would be? Are you happy with what you're seeing, or would you like Roy back?
Now, I'm going to say it. I am very happy watching the football. It is very different, and it is refreshing to watch. It truly is. Carrie watched a Spurs game, because it was the only one that was an early kickoff, and she was like, wow, this is much better. And obviously,
Carrie didn't wake up at 4:55 this morning to watch it with you.
No, mate, she's not really a Palace fan. She's just my wife. So if you want to compare yourself to my wife, feel free. You're definitely losing. The performances have been good. They have been really good. Let's be honest. The only issue I have with the performances, and I might be about to get shot down here by my fellow presenters, I still think we are lacking a little bit of guile and creativity. So if we take today as an example, we didn't really test Sanchez once. He didn't have anything to do. The penalty came about because it was the only time that we did any meaningful running with intent into the box. And we still don't go, like, our runners ahead of the ball are still lacking, I think. Gallagher does it pretty well, but we don't necessarily have the intelligence around the rest of the pitch to find him with the passes.
Who would deny you? What?
Liverpool, I think a good example of Liverpool going, I wasn't expecting us to go out there and boss it and create loads of chances. And we actually did create a few more chances, a bit of like scrappy chances. But when Elise came on, for example, he did a beautiful little step over and charge at Milner, left him for dead. Yes, Milner got back, but we looked like we had a bit more go forward about us. And Spurs is an odd one because the reality was Spurs are shit. The moment I saw that midfield, I just thought, well, they're there for the taking and Harry Kane ain't interested and they don't have Son, so whatever. That said, and I think that will change, we've all said it in the WhatsApp, Elise, Eze when he comes back, and I strongly believe Will Hughes has a part to play in this because he's a good passer of the ball. Things will be very different in that regard. And we'll see some of what we perceive to be the weaker links, Jordan Ayew, probably going back to a bench role. Cool. But that said, there cannot be a single person who is a Palace fan who is sitting there going, I preferred watching football under us, under Roy Hodgson last year, because it was bad. And you take your hat off to Vieira. He has probably proven a few people very wrong. And I didn't think we would be this far ahead. And he's got us playing some very, very good football by Palace standards. So, yeah, that's my take on it.
Yeah, I mean, I would say I agree to a point. I'd say for the creating chances one, and I'll come to Ned and Mark in just a second. Like the creating chances one, if you look at, if we just single out Spurs and Brighton for now, like, because Liverpool, as you said, they gave us space. We'll probably get chances against United. We'll get chances against City as well, just because how they play. They come on the front foot against most teams. But Brighton at times had 11 men behind the ball. Like they're set up. They've got a very good shape about them. Like they were very difficult to pick apart. And then Spurs, if you look at how Nuno plays, he's very defensive as well. So it's all defensive-minded, trying to pick off teams on the counter a second.
Nuno, just quickly, did we dodge a bullet there?
Oof.
Mm. Oof. Just saying.
We will come to players a little bit later on after this. You know, everyone's getting used to Edouard's new, you know, Benteke, like this new thing for Benteke. We're trying to play a different style. So everyone's got to get used to how everyone wants to play again. So, I mean, I think that will come. But let's go up north again. Let's go to Marky Mark. So how are you feeling with the way we're playing?
Yeah, it's good. It's enjoyable to watch. Not that I turned off or didn't watch last season, but there's a noticeable difference in just the flair, what's our attacking flair in the football, not as defensively minded, which, look, had its place and Roy had his job sheet, and I'm not about to poo-poo him and say he didn't get a job done, but Vieira is here and is doing a different job with some different cattle and let's be honest, a different budget. To be honest, we're getting to enjoy the spoils of what Roy did for us the last two or three seasons to give us this springboard to kind of do what we're doing. Vieira was, a relative unknown, untried in the Premier League. Ticking boxes at the moment. Boys are going to bat for him. And yeah, he's obviously still got some systems to work out or work out what he's, best in 11 is, or, I said last season, get a sort of horses for courses type role going. I don't think you should ever be set on an absolute fixed starting 11 for any game. But, it's more enjoyable. And even other fans, we sat with a couple of Spurs guys in the boozer the other week because we're allowed to go out up here. And even though we're saying...
Won't be for much longer, by the looks of things, my friend.
Mm. Remember the last person who said they were enjoying their freedom on this pod,
mate? Mate, I'll stack my 4 COVID cases up against your 893.
We're having next week, mate.
Yeah, that's all good, mate. Going for my jab tomorrow, actually, my first one. So, even the Spurs guys was like, wow, you guys are really enjoyable to watch and turn it on this season. So, you know, more of the same. Still some work to do and some inevitable teething problems the big Pat will have. And, we've still got to take some more chances off field, but the fact that we're creating chances and giving teams a game is refreshing, enjoyable, and more of these.
You got anything else to add, Ned, on that? Are you in agreement?
I think in terms of that, the playing style is obviously, it's good to watch. And so far, you know, it seems to be working. I think most of the mistakes and goals that we're conceding are completely to be expected, given to the inexperience of the players that are in those positions. You sort of look at your centre-back pairing of Anderson and Gaye with Gallagher in front. You got Anderson by far the most experienced at the ripe old age of, 25? Gaye and Gallagher are sitting there looking at first-team football in the Premier League. I know Gallagher had it at West Brom last year. But they were not exactly – his role in that team was not exactly to go forward and attack and have fun. I think it's good to watch. I mean, it would have been interesting to see what we would look like if you take Gallagher out of that midfield, because I think a lot of that work rate and that ability to push on comes through him. And you sort of even saw that. I don't know if Chelsea game is – you know, a bit harsh to judge because it was the first competitive game. But it's the only one we sort of played without him. And we just didn't have those players to push in. I mean, you can imagine last year, you take Conor Gallagher out and you try and get, you know, James Tonkins and, Scott Dan trying to play that lovely intricate football out from the back. And I imagine that we probably would struggle a little bit more. But it's good. We've brought in players that suit what we want to do. Which is good to see, so that, you know, you can see that there was a plan from the outset, even if it did take us a little while to get the manager in place. You can see that there was a plan from the outset, and we sort of tried to get the players in to fill that plan. It's looking good. There'll be teething errors, but
I'll just say, obviously, I'm not a United fan. I've stayed up to watch 20 minutes of United game this season because it was an early kickoff. But the difference, I'd say, is it looks like we've bought to a plan, which is, this is the sort of football we want to play. These are the players who suit the style, and we've done it, right? We've gone for it, and that's it. And it will work or it won't work, and it'll be on Vieira, Doogie and Parrish, right? Look at United. They've wanted Sancho for two seasons and now they finally got Sancho. Did they need to get Jadon Sancho? Nope. Ronaldo suddenly became available and, we've got to get Ronaldo. Did they really?
I just love the concept of Cristiano Ronaldo being an impulse buy.
Yeah, but he was.
He was, 100% he was. Yeah, but he was. Just, like, can you imagine just sort of being the sort of club where it's like, impulse buy, arguably the best player on the planet. Fantastic.
Yeah. Did they need him? Probably. No one's going to turn him down, but no, you didn't. Rafael Varane, yeah, probably. But again, it didn't. They didn't
Van de Beek the year before.
They didn't need these players. It didn't sort the issue out. And I think this is where we have to give a bit more credit to what's going on. And I've been as critical as anyone when it comes to talking about what's the policy, what are we doing, why aren't we signing this player, blah, blah, blah. But now you can't really question it. Because I think it really has shown that
it's been superb.
It's been done. It's brilliant.
Absolutely superb.
Just want to say that now. I think it's seeing Anderson, and yes, he was in the relegated team last year, and yeah, he looked really good because the rest of the players weren't very good. But we're seeing how good I think he really is. I mean, he made an error for a slight error for the West Ham goal, but. Whatever, like, it's
going to
happen.
But I mean, it's the same with Gaye. You look at him; he's super comfortable on the ball. He's made a couple of absolute howlers. But he's 21.
Yeah,
playing centre back, starting centre back for a Premier League side. He's going to make mistakes, like the one today. You know, Guaita, poor kick, and Gaye. Well, I mean, what's he doing? He's got to put his head in there. He's got to try. He's got to try and clear it, but he didn't, and he did that twice this morning. And I can guarantee you, if that situation happens next week, his head will be on that ball.
Yeah, he wasn't aware where Mope was for the second time. So he's stuck there. Yeah, but then you see him against Spurs, and there was a time when he basically went toe-to-toe, England under-21 captain versus the England first-team captain. And I tell you what, if someone had said to you which one's which, you'd have gone, well, Gaye's the England first-team captain, right? He just schooled him. So it looks good. There are still areas of the team we want to improve. And I think now, it's not right now, but we're at a stage now as a development as a club where you can almost turn around and go, well, I don't need to say who we're going to buy, because if we want to buy, sorry, Mark, a right back, well, then you trust the process now. you're trusting the process. If we want to buy a new left winger,
If you wanted to buy a new right back, Mark, obviously we don't need one. We've got the best right back in world football.
And that's a ridiculous shock value, surely.
If we needed cover, though, I mean, just for fun.
Oh, yeah, sure.
We could go out and sign like a Kyle Walker just as backup.
Yeah. Impulse.
Yeah,
I just want to back that point up on Ned. I think it's just the process has worked. It's been good, and it's almost been a little bit American sports like, where teams almost tank or just don't play to their full potential because they're hampered by some reason. We were hampered a little bit by our salary structure and who was on the big salaries and the ages. Knowing full well that when the time comes and you can almost release those funds, you go out there and you really look to invest for a team that can deliver you something now, but it sets you up for 2, 3, 4 seasons time. And I genuinely believe we're going to be, for everything that happened over the past couple of seasons under Roy and where the contracts got to, we are now in a much stronger position as a club. We have assets who we can sell if we need to.
That was the point I was just about to make in terms of all those players that we've got. If they aren't with us for 3 or 4 years, you're getting 40 million for it.
That's right.
Because they're on long-term contracts. They're young, 19, 20, 21. You know, you're looking at your Mitchells, your Elises, your Eze's, Gahee. I think I said Mitchell already. I mean, even Anderson's not exactly ancient. Yeah. So, yeah, Edouard, every single one of them, if they're successful, is going to sell on value. Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, I couldn't agree more. And it's kind of look at Leicester. That's what they're doing. And now they've got the money. They've scouted incredibly well.
Robbie, are you calling it Rob? Are we going to win the league?
Obviously.
So,
we don't have to fact check it. Mahrez,
and like they went and got these players, and they sold Mahrez for 70 million, Kante for 50 million. Drinkwater, they actually at that, but I believe they should have gone to jail for that. For the amount of money.
That was just theft. That was genuinely theft.
Chilwell, they made like 45 million off him. Like that's, and then look at how they've invested in. Like fantastic. So that's kind of where we're heading towards now. Jerome Anderson, his passing. Holy shit.
Not just his passing. Have you seen how composed that guy is on the ball?
Yeah, it's brilliant.
He did a couple of Cruyff turns today and a few times he brought the ball, and Gahee actually brings the ball out of the fence and just look so comfortable.
No, he goes and demands it.
I think Mark and Rob.
Oh, don't you dare.
I think you completely
I'm going to cut him off here, Mark. He's going to go at Wardy.
I think he's about to make a very good point, so we should probably listen to it.
If you want to turn around to me and say that, and Ned, and say that Mamadou Sakho was the best ball-playing centre-back this club's ever had. If you honestly believe that, that's great. He's now number two.
Three.
At least.
At least three. And that's being generous.
I'd say two, because he didn't have the long-range passing.
The two we have in there now make him look even more of a fraud than he ended up being at the end of his career.
He's behind Gary Cahill and Scott Dan as well. From a passing perspective. So he's down to at least five. Martin Kelly's not got a bad passing range. So that's six. Jeku Kouyaté, I mean, there's a midfielder dropping back in. He can definitely pass. So we'll make that seven. Who we have when we came up? I reckon if we put Aaron Wilbraham at centre back when we first came up in season one, he probably would have been able to knock a couple of passes around.
You're not taking his hair into account, though, are you?
No, no, obviously he's got far better hair than all of those people.
Yes, put together.
I mean,
put
that's, together. That's a given.
Yeah.
Look,
yeah.
We jest, but the point remains, those two on the ball.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah.
Well, I think the difference is, I think Sacco's passing range was great. Sacco's first touch was terrifying. Mm. So I'm more than happy to have that passing range, but when the ball comes into the player, you know, if it's coming into Anderson or Gahey, I'm quite confident, even in a tight space, if that ball comes into them, they're going to be able to control it, find a teammate. Whereas Sacco, you know, it could go anywhere. Which is all irrelevant because he's not our player anymore. So
I was going to say, this is a fairly non-word conversation at this point. He's gone and...
we just like... we've just got a sort of fantastic little just two-on-two war going on in this podcast so far. So we thought better...
Before we move on, I will move on from Mamma Sacco being second. I'll give you that. Thing for me, the way we're playing is for the past... especially last season, you look at the fixtures we've got coming up, right? Leicester, Arsenal. I haven't even looked past further than that. I should do in a second. Be like, when are we playing Newcastle? When are we playing Burnley? They're the ones we could win. We wouldn't look at these things. We'll write Leicester off. We'll write Arsenal off. We'll write all these games off. But now, I genuinely think we can win every game we go into. I genuinely do, because of the way we're playing, because of who we've got in our team that can make it that. We've got players that come off the bench that can change things. You know, it's a really nice feeling and very odd feeling to be a Palace fan at the moment. So with that being said, let's kind of move on from that. Well, let's chuck some, I was going to say, like, how can we improve? Like, yeah, like bring players in. I think let's kind of look more, I think there's a couple players are going to stick out there. Let's talk about the players that got a lot of stick from last night. So a lot of them, so Guaita's got a lot of stick. Benteke's got a lot of stick, which is baffling, and Jordan Ayew's had taken a lot of stick. So which players do you think are kind of living on borrowed time in the first team? Do you think some should be, for example, do you think we should try Butland, give him a crack? Eduard, I think, is probably our number one striker, but I do think there's horses for courses with Benteke. Eduard does need to get used to the Premier League as well. Jordan Ayew is a squad player at best. And I'll cut. We can talk about that. I just think that, like, he should have scored. Like, the thing that Ned sent through with the Henry, I didn't even realize that pass was on. But for a Premier League footballer, that Dale, you said he had a good game. He had a decent game. I'll give you that. He does things well. Like, he's got good close ball control. He wins fouls. He works hard. He does that press really well. But for a Premier League footballer, his decision making is absolutely atrocious. Two things that spring to mind. One, last night when he could have played Benteke in. The other one was Liverpool when he had the ridiculous shot. When all he had to do is play the ball across the box to Zaha. Like, his decision, he runs down blind alleys, he doesn't pass. For me, it's time. But hey, I want to start with Mark this time. Like, yeah, well, who would you like to see in the first team? Who do you think, as I said, is on borrowed time? I mean, yeah, love to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, I'd agree there with Jordan. I think he does a lot of the hard, dirty stuff that no one else wants to do, but then at a critical moment will undo some of that good work or just have a bit of a brain fade at the end and take the option that is hard or doesn't pay dividends or doesn't come off. I think Luca might be on borrowed time in midfield there. I think he's kind of flying under the radar a little bit. I'm not sure why he's taking our free kicks. He's not doing much. That one, I'll admit, I was dozing for most of the second half this morning, but there was that one free kick there where he just skied it. It wasn't even within clear of the goal. And I was like, was that supposed to be a pass to someone that was running on out of shot that I couldn't see or nothing? And the camera panned back and was like, no, he's just kicked it there. So, and he's not really been, on fire or, got going for a good while now. And look, he's to be honest, cut the guy a bit of sack. His head could be elsewhere. He'd lost his dad only a couple of weeks ago. Not sure if he's living out in the UK with Luca and his family. But so that's tough. And, you know, considering we've got Hughes yet to strike a blow to get in there and... Yeah, look, obviously, still some moving parts that need to find their perfect home. But yeah, I'd say for me anyway, I'd say Luca and Jordan have got to be close to the chopping block. And on that, on Jordan and all things hair that I like to relate to, is he has he been seeing Townsend's bloke or something? I thought last night. Last year had a really healthy widow's peak. Last night, it looks like it's the tide's turned and it's coming back up.
I actually tried to see the same guy. I was just a little bit late.
You need to stop making those payments.
That's okay. That's okay, Robbie. Probably just come and visit you on delay, mate.
No, he's a, I just paid him in crypto. It's fine. It's fine. Go on then. I mean, so where do you, same question to you for to number two. Would you, for example, would you look at maybe bringing Butler in now? Do you think Gwaites is, there's too many questions being asked? Would, you know, would you take Luca out? I think Luca had a decent game for what he does. Set pieces aside, he should never take another set piece for us. But, you know, yeah, where, what are your thoughts?
So I think there's a couple of sort of little areas that we're probably still, you know, there's still some decisions to be made on. So I think, you know, I'll start with, you know, the obvious one in terms of Jordan Ayew. I think in terms of, he's one of those players that because we want to play this high press, along with Gallagher, Jordan Ayew is by far our best presser in that front third, by far. It's not even close in terms of the amount of effort and work rate the guy puts in. The issue is once he presses and wins the ball, he doesn't know what to do with it. So you've got to find that balance of, do we have, you know, is, I mean, and obviously we've seen 20 minutes of Elise, so I, you know, we can't sort of judge what he can do. But from what I see in those 20 minutes, that's not his game. He's going to be good on the ball. So you have to look at it and go, you want to do a high press, you're either going to have to, give Elise a serious bit of a kick up the backside in terms of work rate, or you're going to have to teach Jordan Ayew how to play football. Which of those is easier? That's, you know, it's obviously up to Vieira. I think our central midfield area is just a real, really interesting sort of spot. I don't think Vieira really knows what our best three are because he hasn't had the chance to sort of experiment with it properly yet. I mean, we've all just completely forgotten about Gyro. We've gone to Roy mode. Just his existence is gone.
He wasn't on the bench this morning. Mateta made the bench over
here. But Mateta's obviously, that's a different position. In that midfield, you're sitting there going, well, if you're playing with that midfield three, who's, you know, which players can sit? You know, you're looking at potentially a Luca, Kouyaté can sit in there, Gyro can sit in there. You know, you could potentially even play Will Hughes, that sort of deep lying playmaker. I think he's got Will Hughes in as the cover slash a long term replacement for Jimmy Mack, but obviously he loves Jimmy Mack. So he's not. So that's what, which is where Will Hughes is in getting a game, and then you've got that sort of more creative outlet, or the energetic outlet, which is Conor Gallagher, who's playing defensive midfield, attacking midfield, left wing, right wing, centre forward, all at the same time, who obviously is nailed on for that spot in the midfield. But then around him, you sort of sitting there going, you know, once an Eze comes back, you know, where are we at with that central midfield area? And I think it does. Because, I mean, the thing is, we are all enjoying this high press and this high-energy football. And the thing is that our most high-energy players who are doing that chasing aren't necessarily the best ball players. So we're sitting there, well, we want to see Will Hughes, we want to see Elise, we want to see these players play. But the thing is, your Jordan Ayews, your Jimmy Max, your Conor Gallagher's are the ones that are giving us that run. So it's a case of, do you sacrifice one for the other? So that's sort of a bit of a question mark. And the other one is obviously, and I know I've brought this up multiple times, is in terms of Guaita, I don't know where Jack Butler's at. He's obviously not the same goalkeeper he was at Stoke a while ago. But Guaita, I mean, it might be worth just resting him for a game just to give him a kick up the backside, if nothing else. Because it's getting to a point where, I mean, the Liverpool game, you could see they were like, right, set piece. This goalkeeper is not going to catch the ball. We are just going to put the ball on his head every single time and put pressure on him. And they've scored 3 goals. Other teams, the ball comes in and he just, because, and I think it possibly stemmed back to that Sheffield United game where he did try and take a catch and just fell over into his own net. Yeah. it's just a case of it's becoming a real problem, because it means we have to always defend that second ball. You never get a ball, if a cross comes in around the goalkeeper, you never get that pressure relieved. You always have to defend the second ball because he just won't catch it. He just refuses to. He refuses to catch it. Shot stopping is obviously great. We know that. Distribution. I mean, this morning, obviously not. But it's, you know, it's not his strong point. His strong point is stopping shots, which is great. But if we're going to evolve into this team that wants to play with the ball and wants to do all sorts of stuff, we're going to need more from him than that. Is Butlin better suited? Maybe that's a question we need to find out.
Okay. Dale, wrap it up.
Yeah. So there are three moments in today's game, which for me is why, just going back to your original point, the three players who probably got a bit of criticism, this is why. IU was obviously the miss. That's why I'd give him criticism. I think if you're in that position, you've at least got to work the goalkeeper. I don't mind you not scoring, work the goalkeeper. He did not. He's getting up to 40-odd games now without a goal, which is concerning when you think he's played in the nine position. He's played front right of a three. But as Ned has pointed out, he is in there for as much as his pressing as he is goal scoring. And it's almost a stage now where his goal scoring is a bonus if it happens. We probably got spoiled a few seasons ago when he scored those 10 goals into thinking, well, here we go. He's now going to kick on and do this every season. He's not. He's never been that sort of player. He's never been that sort of player. So let's just bear that in mind. Benteke got stick. And for me, the only reason he gets any stick is because he's appalling control at the corner, which... A lot of stuff happens between then and the final whistle, but we were hoping to have prime shithousery Benteke from the home game against
Watford.
Watford.
Him and IU, yeah.
That's what we were hoping for, but we didn't get it. And the Guaita thing, it's so annoying because it wasn't a free kick. Goalkeeper is an endangered species. He didn't get fouled. He then took advantage of the fact he knew he would get the free kick, so he stayed down and milked it. When we should have had a throw-in just before the halfway line, again, things could have been different. So those three, for me, you just look at and go, you know, what's the situation with them? Yes, Edouard came in, but I think we saw more of the Edouard we're likely to see against on the game against Liverpool than we are against Tottenham. So Tottenham came on, scored the two goals. It was fairy tale stuff. It was brilliant. Liverpool, he had a couple of chances where his first touch was awful and he could have possibly jagged the goal. So at critical times as well. So I'm a bit wary about that. I don't know what the answer is.
He didn't do a lot this morning either. I mean, no, his pressing was good. His running around was good. But he's one of those players where, particularly when you play with 10 men behind the ball, he wants that ball played to him in space so he can finish.
Yeah. He didn't
and if you haven't got space, he doesn't really know what to do.
No, and he didn't attempt to run into, well, obviously, from what we saw on the TV screen, he didn't look like he tried to run into that space either. Sorry, Mark.
Oh, I was just going to say, he got one shot off fairly quickly in traffic this morning.
He did.
And I'm
not saying that he's not good. I'm just saying that I think let's not think we've got a 20-goal striker on our hands. I think we've probably got more of the 10 to 12 anyway. I do think that Butlin should be given a chance, mainly because I think it's not healthy for a club to have a goalkeeper sat on the bench continually. Butlin's had one chance in the League Cup. We lost on penalties. That's almost his season done, because depending on what happens in the FA Cup, we might end up going with a strong side. You know, he needs some chances. I would be happy to give him a chance. It's not like we're chucking in Remy Matthews. And I'll back Ned up. I don't know what the go is of our centre midfield. I'm not criticising our centre midfield in any way, shape or form. It is working at the moment. I think it would be very different if we didn't have Conor Gallagher in there. I'll take that on board. We've been quite lucky, I think, in terms of the oppositions we've played. Liverpool and Chelsea aside, the midfield we played against haven't been great. So apart from those two top six sides, top four sides, I haven't looked at anyone's midfield and gone, nah, they're going to overrun us. I think today might have been different if Eve Bazuma played. I think it would have been different if McAllister plays. So, but as it, they didn't, and I think we look good. It will be interesting to see what happens if a 33-year-old Jimmy Mack goes down with an injury. What do we do then? Who comes in? Do we try and replace him with a Kouyaté, or do we go, right, do you know what? Maybe we do need a bit more guile in there, so we go over Will Hughes. So it'll be interesting to see.
Well, I think that's where Will Hughes comes in. I think that's the only reason I can see that Will Hughes hasn't played yet.
Yeah.
Is that they've got him they've got him earmarked as the Jimmy Mack role. Or potentially as cover for Conor Gallagher, who's obviously undroppable at the moment.
Yeah.
He's probably the only one in that midfield. But we've got behind Conor Gallagher, I think we've got five, maybe six central midfield players who are all of that sort of similar standard that aren't going to light the place on fire. But if any of them go down,
yeah,
probably just going to put someone else in who's exactly the same.
Yeah. I think nutshell is, are we happy with the team? Everyone thinks we're probably there or thereabouts this morning. The big question marks are from that starting 11 this morning are Guaita and Ayew. There is a case for Ayew, which I think is a strongish case, depressing. The case for Guaita is beginning to become a bit harder to make. And there are a couple of people on this pod who have probably called this out two seasons ago. So
I would agree and disagree. I'd say...
Of course you will.
No. I would flip it around with the Guaita and Ayew. I think Guaita's got a ton of credit in that bank, but there are the questions are start and rightly so are starting to be asked. But I mean, if we want to be this new take the next step as a team, I don't think we can have Jordan Ayew. I'm not saying he doesn't work his absolute socks off, because he really, really does. I get that. But as Ned said, I could go run around for 90 minutes.
No, you couldn't.
I could do it for 95 seconds. But like, you could go and get a League Two player that could run around like Jordan Ayew does, right? But the reason they're in League Two is they don't make the right decisions. They're not that as good. Whereas if Ayew wins the ball high up, brilliant, and then makes the complete wrong decision, what was the point?
Mate, I think we're being a little bit harsh on Jordan Ayew.
I don't think we are, mate.
You basically just compared him to a League Two footballer, and I don't think he's quite a League Two.
No, but as I said, his close ball control is fantastic. He makes three kicks is fantastic, but he makes wrong decisions,
bad decisions. I'm not sitting here going, we need to defend him, he needs to play. I'm just saying he does make some bad decisions, yes. But there are also times when that guy does stuff for that team that no one else on the pitch can probably do and get us out of a world of crap. He really does. And a little bit like how we have to take the petulance of Wilf with the overall package of Wilf, we might be in a situation where we have to take some of the bad decision-making of Ayew as the whole package of Ayew and what he brings to the team.
Yeah, because I think with Ayew, it's a case of you want him to do the pressing so that someone else wins the ball. If he presses and he wins the ball himself, you're like, oh, damn, that's annoying. If he presses and they cough the ball up to Conor Gallagher, or they cough the ball up to Wilf, or they cough the ball up to Edouard, and we score a goal, Ayew gets no assist, he gets no credit for it, but he and Gallagher are the only two that can do it. They're the only two in our squad that are
taken. And I may be getting myself slightly confused in the game this morning. That the chance that Wilf...
It's on too early, mate. That's what it was.
No. The chance that Wilf had where he was offside, I think it was Ayew who pressed and made the mistake, and the ball got passed to Edouard, who then played, and Wilf was offside, and he tried to play him in. I think it kind of happened. I might be mistaken.
Yeah, in the second half, yeah.
Yeah, I think yeah. it kind of happened like that. And that's what you... It's not what you want him for. You want him to, he's wearing number nine. You want him to score goals.
That's fine. Put him in number 19. That's
19,
fine.
Yeah. But if he's not going to score the goals and he's going to play, he's not a passenger. He's completely not a passenger. And there are other people in our team in the past who you would say have been a passenger if they've not been doing their main job.
I mean, yeah, I get what you're saying. I do. I mean, the one thing I will take offence at is I said I was harsh comparing Jordan Ayew to a League Two player. Do not ever dare compare Wilf to Jordan Ayew again. That is slanderous. That deserves to be called out.
I'll have to back you up on that one, Rob.
I think I didn't compare them as players.
Well, I do not care. Not in the same breath. Never. Mamma Sacco, Wilf, okay. Jordan Ayew, no. But Ned brought this up, and I don't know if he can do it any. And as Ned rightly said, I don't think it is his game, but we've seen 20 minutes of Elise. Maybe we put him in and say, right, you have to press. Because people are going to want it. The thing is, we've got here, people are going to want to play in this team. People are going to want to play for Vieira. People want to play this football. People want to play this team that's looking good and exciting. So if you say to a player, you don't press, you don't play, you know, then we might get Elise pressing, probably not as well as Ayew, but if he presses and gets the ball, then we've got a player that looks like he knows what he's doing on the ball.
Can I ask a question about notice? I know we want to move on to Aussie shit and the Carl Beard game, Carl Beard. And I've got a Weiss to eat, and I've got port today. So I'm really I'll be drinking it during the port.
I was waiting to ask what you were shutting down throughout the pod.
Yeah, that's a Penfold's 20-year-old grandfather, mate. Just saying.
That would have been a
bloke that said he didn't have any money through his house up. He's drinking a 20-year-old Penfold.
No.
When he's not in his spa.
It was a birthday present. It arrived, didn't know it was coming. It arrived, so I'll take it. We're in this situation where we're talking about Elise coming in for IU and whatever, right? I'm really intrigued to see what happens with Eze, because he was our player of the year last year. He's creative. He's not a presser, but under the Rory system, he had to do that work, and his work rate was probably as high as anyone else's. And I'm really intrigued to see where we go, how it all fits, how Vieira keeps people happy, which is a lovely problem to have. I've been trying to figure it out, and we all keep saying, if Elise and Eze to come into this team, we're going to be really good. You can't have them both. And Eze is surely ahead of Elise. I'm just keen to know other people's thoughts in regards to where we go. And Eze might be back at some time in October. It's a rumour. I don't know how true it is.
Can we not have them both down? You spent the entirety of last season trying to explain to us how Eze was a central midfield player. So why can't we have him in central midfield?
Because you'd probably then blunt Conor Gallagher to a certain extent.
Gallagher got him to the end of the season. So.
Yeah. But my view on Eze is I think he's better as a 10. And Ned, I know you said he played more as a 10, but on the left-hand side. Granted, that's fine. But even if he does that, I struggle to see how we get Edward, / Benteke, Zaha, Eze, Elise, Gallagher, and then what would then Luca and...
Okay, well, Luca out, done. Next.
Luca out. Coyote?
So I would say you'd be looking at... I mean, I think the only way you get Eze in is you have to drop someone like a Jimmy Mack.
That's my thinking.
So you could then potentially have Edouard Benteke up front, depending on who you're playing. So it's only ever one of them. Zaha on one side, Elise on the other, with Eze and Gallagher behind, and then pick someone to play holding mid, whoever that may be, and then panic wildly every time the opposition gets the ball.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's that is.
It's a great lineup for when we play Norwich, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, for me, for where I see it, and yes, I get the running panic when the other team have the ball, but at the moment, Conor Gallagher's doing that the defensive and attacking midfield job because, as you said, Dan, no one else is making those runs. Jimmy Mack's 33 years old; he can't do it the whole game. So Jimmy Mack's just kind of floating around. I'd say, you know, edge of the centre circle in their half back to kind of just like mid our half. I'd say that's where he's doing most of his work. So I would say, well, with if you get Eze in, you just swap, you put Eze in like the Gallagher, like do the attacking part of Gallagher and Gallagher in the Jimmy Mack bit. He doesn't go as far forward. He can't.
Yeah, you sacrifice Conor Gallagher's forward work because, I mean, the only reason he's scored goals and he's creating chances is due to his work ethic. And it's not because he's this sort of world-beating ball player who can dribble nine players and ping one in the top corner from you know, 40 yards. So he's one of the, so if you were to have the creativity of an Eze, you don't need Gallagher in that forward spot.
Nice.
So then he can become that defensive player and do that work.
Nice problem.
Absolutely.
And I kind of agree with what you're saying. I also worry that would we then be getting the best out of Conor Gallagher? Probably not. And
that's fine. We do that second half of the season, so he looks a little bit shitty and getting on the cheap.
And whilst Eze is a creative player, a very different player to Eze. Very different player to Gallagher. So just, look, just wanted to chuck it out there. Let's not crack on with it. Let's move on to the next
topic. I agree. It's a very good point, very good problem to have. But I think as we all think, as much as we'd love to have Conor Gallagher here next season, the way he started this, that he's either in and around that Chelsea squad next season, or he's going for monster money.
Yeah, so you're talking at least 30 mil.
Exactly. We're not going to spend 30 mil on a centre midfielder.
The annoying thing is, with 30 mil, he'll end up at like
Leicester.
Leicester or Everton, for example. And that's really annoying.
Well, the thing is, though, what I will say, and this will bring out my optimistic side here, which doesn't come out very often, is if you look at our midfield and you go, right, you want 30 million for Conor Gallagher to play in that midfield, you go, right, well, at the moment we have too many players in that central midfield spot. You sell two of them for 5 to 10 million each. You sell a Jairo Redewald, for example. You cash in a little bit there. He's still young. He's done an all right job. Newly promoted club comes up. You go, we want 10 million for Jairo Redewald. They go, yep, all right, no worries. Or you send him back to Holland and someone will buy him there. And then, you know, maybe even a Kouyaté or someone who you're going to get a little bit of money for. You sell a couple of those, all of a sudden that 30 million comes down to 10 million. You've lost a bit of depth, but there's too many players there anyway. They're not playing. So all of a sudden you're losing two players, but you're only spending 10 million and you're keeping a Conor Gallagher.
Maybe. I see where you're coming from, but I mean, with Jairo,
it's all hypothetical.
Yeah, of course it's all.
That's not the plan. But yeah, I that makes it sweeter.
It would just certainly soften the blow, but I reckon with those boys are on fairly, like they were pre-new things. So I reckon they're on fairly big wickets with regards to their contracts. So it might be not that easy, but I do believe Kouyaté's out of contract next summer. So that might be.
Just to close a loop on it, I'm trying so hard not to fall for Conor Gallagher.
I would know.
I mean,
hook, line, and sinker, mate.
It's like the West Ham fan the other week when they played United, who had a Lingard show.
Yeah.
I mean, how hard would that hit him? I just, got bitten with Loftus-Cheek, getting bitten again with Gallagher.
Like, Gallagher's twice as good as Loftus-Cheek was.
He is, but I got bitten by that bug when he played for us because he was so good for us. He was a Rolls Royce when he was fit.
Better to have loved and lost
than
never at all
doubt.
There's your title of the pod.
Yeah, come on in. So let's move it on to our Aussie ship from our resident Aussies. So Marky Mark, this is where I hand over to you. Talk everything Australian football.
I know where Mark's going to start and I know where he should start. And if you don't, I'm going to cut you off and I'm going to take your spot. So off you go.
How odd that Rob throws it to Mark and yet the voice of Ned Rock starts. That's only about the 17th consecutive fucking time that's happened. So I'll start with whatever I fucking like, Ned.
Yeah, boy!
that. All things Australian football. I'm starting with the Australian men's team, if that's all right with you, Ned.
No.
Okay. Anyway, there's a couple things going on. The Australian men in the throes of their World Cup qualification process just gone 10-0 with 32 goals scored and only conceding two, which is only the fourth time any country has ever done 10 on the trot whilst qualifying for a World Cup. First nation to do it from the Asian Confederation, which we are now a part of. So not a bad return for them. Then we are playing again in 8 or 9 days' time. I think we have Oman and Saudi Arabia coming up, or Oman, Japan and Saudi a bit later on in the year. So boys looking good. Some would argue that there hasn't been real stiff opposition in those 10 games, the likes of Chinese Taipei and Nepal. These are hardly footballing heavyweights, but you can only play what's in front of you, Rob. And we've been doing it with a leg in the air, brother. So I don't care. Long may that continue. I love it. Love watching the boys go around. And yeah, getting a few of the new guys in. Graham Arnold's going well with his role there. The women, a bit of a bobble against Ireland just last week, lost that 3-2. A lot of the girls from the Olympics were not in that team. Ellie Carpenter, a notable absentee. So, yeah, we're just starting to raise a few questions of the national coach, Gustafsson, I believe, who it is. Good pedigree. I think he's won a World Cup or been assistant manager to win a World Cup. So, I'd like to think he knows what he's doing. But he's, yeah, I think out of 8 games, he's only won 2 at the moment. So, not great there. They also have 2 friendlies coming up against Brazil next month here in Australia at Combank Stadium down Parramatta Way. So if you ever have Gladys unlock the big padlock on your front door, Rob, you might be able to get up the road and watch that, mate.
Perhaps. Miles away. Dale go. Just from Dale.
Parramatta.
So, yeah, cup friendly against Brazil for the girls next month. I think the first couple of rounds of the A-League have been released. It starts mid-November-ish. Brisbane Roar today just signed a guy called Henry Hoare. So I'm looking forward to the chance the Den come up with for him. Yeah, November 19th, the boys kick off there. So I might get out to that. And that's about all I've got stuff, all the stuff I've got in the Aussie Wrap. Obviously, there's no club football here at the moment, and now Ned's about to put a red line through it all and dazzle us with his wares.
No, I just can't believe that you've not gone with this, Mark, because your ex Brisbane Roar women's player, Emily Gelnick, who I know you are a very big fan of, opened her account in the Women's Super League over the weekend, bagging the winning goal against Brighton.
You sure did, Ned, and she's in my notes for later on in the fucking pod, mate.
Okay.
Later on, how much late are we going?
Jesus, yeah.
That's after my Aussie stuff. I just have a little quick amendment from the last pod. But Ned, do you have anything else, mate, in the Aussie camp for that?
Not at all. Sorry. No, love you.
Okay. Mate, while we're here, Rob, you want to get your skates on, mate? And Dale, you've obviously got wheat bars to eat and another litre of port to neck before you go to bed. So we'll wrap it up. Yeah, I just want to make a quick amendment to the last pod, and obviously we don't fact check on this pod. Ned stated that earlier, and look, I was just trying to inject an element of humour for the viewers at home by saying, with in conjunction with our Joel Ward Award, that Watford might have the Tony Awards. Now, in my haste, and the flurry of fixtures we'd had, I mentioned Watford, not Brentford, Ivan Toney, obviously plays for Brentford. Tony Awards, world-renowned stage play awards, the Tony Awards. Very good. So I thought, I don't know if, you know, arguably that amendment would have saved the joke on the night. I'm not entirely sure, but anyway, so I thought that was just worth a footnote there. And on that, I've decided to double down on the whole gag. Wait for it, Dale. So I figured, you know, with us doing the Joel Ward Award and now that I've looked into it, Brentford, their podcast doing the Tonys, the Tony Award, you could have Shanghai Port, their podcast, they could do the Oscars, I think over there. You with me, boys? You're running with?
Yep, I'm with you.
Yeah, I did.
Okay. I did say I was doubling down.
Okay.
Then you know, bringing it with a bit of Aussie flavour, St Kilda Football Club. They could. Their podcast could dish out the Grammys, thanks to Jason Graham, who played there 2004 through to 2012. And Ned, bringing it full circle with some Aussie flavour, the Villains, their podcast, thanks to having Emily Gilnick, they could dish out the Emmys on their pod, who, of course, scored the winner on debut. Thank you, Lyndon. Thank you, ball boys.
Well played. I apologize. If I'd known that was coming in, I would never have gone with it. That's, brilliant stuff.
That's brilliant. Just remind me, you did stand-up comedy.
I did for a period of time, yeah. At least cool. That's what I called it.
Yeah, long time
ago. I did Fenny Comedino.
That's good.
Grace's Stages and got paid for it. Yeah. Supported Ross Noble, one of your swinging cats who lives out in here. Good lad.
I like him. But no, mate, look, there's a lot of hard work's gone into that. That's more work gone into that little segment there than it's gone to the rest of every pod we've done combined. So well done. Yeah,
well done. Thank you, mate. Look, arguably one of the best Aussie segments ever. Ned, well done for stealing all the thunder there by bulldozing it. I mean, bull in a china shop is what comes to mind with the Emily Gilnick thing, but let's go on. So look, we haven't played it in a while, so we're going to end with the Culvert game. And the question is, I'll do the Culvert game today. The question is,
okay.
The date is September 21st, 1996. Palace thrash Reading 6-1. Who scores the sixth goal?
Calvert.
Anyone? Any other takers? Over Calvert.
What year was it?
96.
It was a week after my birthday.
That's great to know, Dale, but don't care.
My answer was hinged off that, actually. I was going, Dale, was that just the week after your birthday?
Mate? It was.
Just before Brentford came up with the Tony Awards. So.
6, Neil Emblem.
Gone for Neil Emblem. Calvert, Neil Emblem.
I'm off by a couple of years and Dale's birthday's throwing me, but I'm going to say Kevin Musket.
Kevin Musket was, in fact, George and Dar. So there we go, the Culvert game. But Culvert scored the fifth. That's why it's a Culvert game.
That's how he gets you.
Got the sixth. Look at that. I'm a tricky trickster, man.
Loved his hair.
Tricky guy.
That's how he gets you.
Skinniest legs of all time.
Yeah.
George and Dar. That just leads me to say, thank you very much for Ned, Mark, Dale. Another one in the bag, lads, as we improve with every show, I believe. I mean, I think that, I don't know what anyone else thinks. We are all off to have ourselves a wee spa. We're off for that. And up the panties.
Oh, Ned. Love it, mate. You got Ned's going to... Oh, boys, I love it.
That waist bar you say, Rob. We reckon I'm going to have a waist bar. Oh, yeah. Mango.
What flavour do you get, Mark?
Mango, mate.
Very nice. Got the I've gone for the dark chocolate and coconut.
Ooh, yummy.
I've gone for the... I completely forgot, so I didn't get any.
But I love it.
Dale's got 450 in his freezer, so I'm going to go buy one of his and get in his jacuzzi as soon as that is lets me out.
What a great way to end the podcast, gentlemen. Thank you very much. It means a lot.
You mate. Thank you.
Anyway, you got a fuckers.